David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise episode 455. I'm your host, Steve Raker, down in the comic book bunker with character cards all spread out on the table, trying to pick out a new team of heroes. My first two choices, of course, are Andrew the LA Rabbit and WW Whirlwind X Kevin, my co-hosts with the mosts.
Ew, I made the team.
Ugh. We're definitely street level if I'm on the team. We might be below street level, Steve.
It's either like the cards with the heroes on it when you're picking, you know, the team and trying to come up with a roster, or it's like a villain who's like a sharpshooter, right? And he's got like his cards of targets and he's got them like a hand of potential victims. That's pretty much when we see the cards. Marvel Noise is the first and longest-running Marvel-centric podcast, close to finishing up our 18th year. We're also the podcast proudly sponsored by Nobody, and part of the Deliberate Noise Network for as long as the Ancient One, Derek Coward, keeps the lights on and the toilets flushing. You can listen to and download new episodes over on MarvelNoise.com and check out our sister show, Indie Comic Book Noise, where we talk about the DC books we're reading. Well, Andrew does most of the time. We talk about indie books.
Wait, so Derek handles plumbing issues? Does he do house calls?
You can find those episodes on indiecomicbooknoise.com. All right. Item. I've got some news. Kevin. Is this new group book New Thunderbolts or New Avengers?
It's not Thunderbolts.
They you know, at the end of the Thunderbolts Doomstrike series, we had that house ad that showed the Winter Soldier, Black Widow, Clea, Carnage, Namor, the X-23 Laura Kinney Wolverine, and Hulk, maybe Scar? I don't know, but... as the new Thunderbolts. And then what comes out today, it's not New Thunderbolts, it's New Avengers number one.
Of course.
With that team. And I'm like, huh? They did the movie thing where they changed the title.
Yeah. That was the whole point.
Written by Stan Humphries with art by Tone Lima. I mean, did the movie really do that bad at the get-go, that they had to change the name and even change the comic? Oy. And the threat is like a Spidey-level villain who's been dead and come back so many times I can't even keep track. A little surprising.
Oh, was Pastebot Pete?
I said Spidey.
Wait, the Trapster's not a Spidey?
He's a Human Torch.
Yeah,
he's really a Human
FF,
Torch.
Yep.
Human Torch specific, Steve.
When
do you really see the Trapster taking him?
Yes, I mean, with the Frightful Four.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, on his own, you know. You don't get to count his group affiliations. He's a Torch guy from way back when.
Maybe the new Trapster, wasn't it? Or was it Traps? Oh, it was one of those fancy, you know, modern spellings of Trapster. Maybe that Trapster is a Spider-Man villain.
The Trapster. What happened to Pastebot Pete and the easel and the bucket of paint or paste?
What if there was a story where, like, there's a new Pastebot Pete on the scene and then the Trapster's like, wait a second, what?
And it's a girl, so there can be girl Doc Ock, girl Scorpion, girl Beetle, girl Pastebot
Patricia.
Yeah.
Pastebot Patty.
Male Black Cat. Oh, wait, that's really the Black Fox.
Also, Kevin, I thought of you because I was looking through previews at the trade paperback collections and stuff, right? As we used to do on the reg. And they've got a new Guardians of the Galaxy Epic Collection, which is Volume 3, solicited. But and now they're into the it's like the second Epic Collection that is into the Jim Valentino stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But in 2013, they came out with a Volume 1 of Guardians of the Galaxy by Jim Valentino trade paperback, right? And I bought that. And it ends with issue 7 and the first annual and material from the Fantastic Four annual, Thor annual, and Silver Surfer annual, because all the annuals had a little story together. But that's like 172 pages of it. Then the new Epic Collection starts with issue 7 and the annual number 1 and those other annuals, repeating 172 pages out of this trade paperback I already have.
You should have bought the other collections then.
Yeah, but I have so much of the, I have that other stuff reprinted elsewhere. It's
I know I have the Valentino run, but it's in the thicker collections. What was it? Wasn't Guardians 3000? I don't know. I just know I have that stuff already in chunky collections.
going to be like half the Epic Collection if I repeat. It's like, ah, man, I don't know. Anyway. Hey, another item is Dave K, friend of the show, visited the bunker. And I
Did you
got
get
some.
him on tape?
No. It was a social call. I met his wife. We chatted around my kitchen table in stately Raker Manor here, and then descended into the bunker, and it was a good visit.
Yeah, Dave, I'm Jelly. The mighty Dave K. The man, the myth, the mystery. Look at you, Super Steve, rubbing elbows with legitimate celebrities.
And we should hawk
Being
his
jelly.
book too, right? You can get his book Lowest Common Denominator on Amazon and elsewhere, I would think. It's a massive tome collecting his musings and suggestions on various horror movies. And he's seen them all, it seems, from all around the whole world too.
Yeah, a lot of indie kind of budget stuff seems like fun. A lot of movies. I'm no movie guy. I have a lot of stuff I'd never heard of.
Also, this past weekend was the June 2025 Albany Comic Con, where my friend John, whose store is Excellent Adventures in Boston Spa, New York, he puts on a great show here at the Polish Convention Center in Albany, like 5 minutes from my house, where the bar is open by like 10 a.m. and the breakfast sandwiches and Polish sausages are flying out the self-serve window. It's quite a scene. But this time we had writer Ron Mars, artists Val Simek, Mark Sinnott, Paul Harding, Mike McCone, Richard Clark, Paul Pelletier, Russ Braun, John Herbert, Christian St. Pierre, brother of Joe St. Pierre, and I think the better artist too, and good friend of Marvel Noise, Jim Whiting too. And this kind of show, I've said it before and I'll say it yet again, it's great to be able to talk casually several times during the day with these guys. It's not a you wait in line and you get your 2 minutes and then you respectfully move aside because it's the next person's turn and that was your moment. You get to really chat and hang out and see the things they're working on. And I got to watch Mike McCone and a friend explore some different types of watercolor paint and how they reacted to different things, and then got a little lesson in how he uses his watercolors to get his flesh tones and things. And it's, by the time you're done, you've talked not just about comics and, their comics, but all comics, things that, similar comics that you like or enjoyed in the past, or, things going on with your houses. And it's just such a more intimate type of setting than the big shows. So much more relaxed.
Yeah, it was funny. Another big show was happening at the same time, the counter programmed TCAF.
How was that?
Oh, I didn't think you were talking about Burbank Robo Toy Fest, Kevin. I want to hear about TCAF. Yeah, you always make that show sound so good, Super Steve.
I mean, shoot, it's 5 minutes from my house. If those guys are going to come out and sketch and hang out, I'm going to be there.
Yeah, why not? Like I said, I went to a little tiny show, but it was mostly toys with only a little bit of comics. But I poked through, saw Millie the Model, almost pulled the trigger, but dang, boys, those old comics are expensive. Like, I just want reader copies, you know what I mean? And I think it's just a function of the age, you know, as the years click on. Those Millie the Models were not, they made it to 200 or something, I think. I'm basing that on our episodes where we cover them, but yeah.
Any good toys?
I picked up some vintage G.I. Joe. It was a bunch of Star Wars, but I'm kind of happy with, and modern toys too. And of course, the stuff I'm going to buy, like those, the 70s, the big Shogun Warriors and Godzillas and all that stuff. But that stuff's all out of my price range. I mean, it's cool to look at, but I don't want to spend a fortune on something. And I like the littler size anyways. It really just makes it nice because it's the new 6-inch stuff is fun, but it's just too much room. Like I bought a little vehicle and because it's in that 3 3/4, it's a lot gentler on space, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah.
I just not a lot of room in the rabbit warren here, so I'm all out. But it was just fun to kind of walk around and be in one of those little shows where, like, I didn't pre-buy tickets. I walked in, and if you were paying cash, the line was even shorter. I love that. Nice. You got cash? I was texting and couldn't even finish the text before I got in the place. So, and, you know, $20, it's a pretty good deal, I feel like. There was, like, one of those early bird pay extra, but I'm not really looking to, you know, hunt the best deal in the world. I guess those are, Kevin, you've set up shows. Do you get in early for those ones, right? When on those ones, you get to, like, work the deals ahead of time?
Yeah, there's a lot of shows, and sometimes multiple levels where you can always, for a certain amount of cash, get in before the regular people get in.
Or us regular peasants and loot all exactly. The good deals. But mm-hmm. I thought it was pretty good pricing. I think that things have cooled down a little on some fronts. So, you know, there were deals to be had.
My friend Paul Harding, who is that, you know, toy and statue sculptor, has some really nice line of those new retro G.I. Joes that are with, you know, a modern sculpt and modern articulation and everything, but they're on the cards that are, you know, the vintage looking cards and everything. Oh my gosh, they look so cool. He had a whole bunch of them out on his table. And actually I was talking to Paul Pelletier about his run on the Real American Hero G.I. Joe that he was doing when he was filling in recently for that Chris Mooneyham or whatever his name is. The challenges and fun of doing G.I. Joe type stuff.
Yeah, I gotta imagine with the having to get approvals and everything, it adds just another extra layer of fun.
Yep.
But yeah, I remember
you gotta get the vehicles just right.
Yeah, because Paul Harding had that Kickstarter for his own toy line. It didn't get funded, but it was in the short, smaller size too. I mean, I do have a lot of the 6-inch, but unlike you boys, I ain't got room for thousands and thousands of toys.
I was this close to buying Ernie and Bert from them, though. Man, those are such such good sculpts. And the Count. He had the Count, too.
Yeah, I've seen some nice. Are those the Super 7 ones? Or are those from some? There's a bunch. What's other? Also weird, bunch of toy companies now in LA based too, although they don't, I think they just do a lot of online stuff. I don't know that they have showrooms or whatever, but it's been interesting. The toy space is always fascinating now that they've kind of acknowledged it's a lot of it's for adults.
Right.
They just make it expensive and aren't hiding behind excuses or whatever.
Yeah, and then you go, it's not worth it, and you don't buy them. I'm like, they're like, here's a Hulk for $80. And I'm like, thanks, I'm good.
Yep. No, I was thinking of the more the small companies. You know, the just...
It's still...
I mean, those are expensive. Oh, yeah, they're even more expensive, but it's also because they're a niche.
And then they have three companies making the same figure. And I'm like, I don't know how you do licensing, but man.
Oh, we're supposed to get that licensed?
Yeah, right.
Oops. Just how indie are we here? All right. We did a group read on a couple of series from the 2000s and looking a little at how the Defenders were handled during that decade. One being the Defenders Volume 3. If you think of the first series being the Defenders series that ran for like 150 issues or almost 150 issues. Then the second volume is the Eric Larson volume that I still think is not on the Marvel Unlimited. And then volume 3 is a 5-issue limited series written by Keith Giffen and J.M. DeMatteis with art by Kevin Maguire. It's the Bwahaha Gang.
Yeah, they put this out in one of those premier hardcovers that I have.
Oh, cool. Originally, it came out from July 2005 to January 2006. And I liked the new logo with like the four symbols for Strange, Hulk, Namor, and the Surfer. I thought that was kind of a nice design touch.
That's good.
Nice that he made him home. Alien, I like that he made him all extra homely too.
Yeah, I mean, the faces on the cover of the first ish tell you what their take on the characters are. Like, Namor is elitist and above it all, right? The Hulk is, he's a little like Drax the second time around. And the Surfer is so alien, leaving Doc, he's got to react to it all. And Maguire renders great facial reactions, so we're treated to that throughout the whole series. But what I like here is that the series... You know, sure, there's humor, right? But it's like informed humor. It's not just presenting the characters being silly, but they're more poking fun at things that we've all experienced in our collective journeys reading comic books and for better, you know, for large part, just accepted, like that Wong is Doc's manservant, right? They like play on things like that, like you're a manservant. That, you know, the series opens with Nightmare possessing Wong and giving a Doctor Strange a hard time about it. So kind of you're hit right away with the tone of the book.
Yeah, I thought it was funny that they had to also quickly spin why Nightmare's acting way out of character too. Because at first I was like, boy, I don't know that I would have picked Nightmare for this gig, but then they write an in-story kind of, oh, here's why Nightmare is acting not like you've seen him before, because his exposure to people has, you know, changed his attitudes and everything. And I was like, okay, I can dig it. Just give me an explanation.
Umar and Dormammu team up, and they look to invade Earth. And there's a big time brother and sister dynamic going on here with, you know, Dormammu trying to please Umar like she's their mother or something like that. And I mean, they even go down the Smothers brother road of like, you know, dad liked you best and that kind of thing.
But, yeah, a different take on Dormammu too.
Sure. Getting to see, you know, when it's familial, things change, right? The guy who's the despot at work goes home and gets bossed around by his, you know, sister and that kind of thing.
I think they made a Marvel Legends of this costume, too.
You have this version of Dormammu with the costume? Yeah. I couldn't remember
Build-A or something?
Was it? Yeah, I have it. But I wasn't sure if it appeared before this or this was the first design of that.
This is probably the first design, but I'm not 100% sure.
So Strange is getting the defenders back together. And to me, it was reminiscent of Jake and Elwood Blues, getting the Blues Brothers band back together. Because, you know, all the people that they're trying to bring in are pretty reluctant, and they require a certain amount of cajoling, just like in the Blues Brothers. And the Surfer is so alien, but he's also like spaced out, which I thought was kind of funny. Like, not only did they have him hanging with Surfer types, you know, who they understand the board and all that, then the relationship of the board to the wave, and he's impressed by that, but it's also like being out in the cosmos, it has the effect on the Surfer almost like being someone who's taken a lot of psychedelics, because he's seen so much out there, right? He fits right in with these guys, at first at least.
Yeah, I thought making him look like the old kind of alien, like the ETs people think about, was a smart move too, with like the big round eyes and the head shape different and everything. Distinctly alien.
Tiny, tiny mouth. So Umar and Dormammu develop their own agendas, of course. Dormammu wants to punish Strange and remake the multiverse in his image. Dormammu is not Strange's. And Umar wants to, she kind of wants to turn the Hulk into her consort and kill Dormammu and then maybe settle down. And so Dormammu at one point succeeds in taking Eternity down and remakes the whole universe, including with evil doppelgangers of all the Marvel heroes, which leads to a big Strange versus Strange confrontation and an eventual big brawl with the big bad at the end.
The taking down of Eternity did give me like Original Sin vibes a little bit. But that was a cool visual of him bleeding out the galaxy, because he's the character that's formed kind of, it's a silhouette filled with stars and planets and everything. So I thought, that's a pretty funny way to go about showing it.
But then you know something big is going on if you're taking out someone like that.
Maguire did a good job too, I think, going from having your eye and your attention focused on minute things like facial expressions and dialogue, and then jumping to big cosmic abstract things, right? Like and dark dimensions and the mindless ones, and the scene where the Hulk is on the other side of the barrier with the mindless ones, and Strange is like, I can't get him out of there. It's like only Dormammu's magic can break down the barrier, you know? And they're like, well, we got to get him out of there. And later when Dormammu shows up, he's like Tolkien pontificating at the heroes. And then he also stops mid-sentence and you see his attention get caught by something off panel. He's like, wait, what's he doing over there? It's like some of the timing that that this creative team has honed from their time doing all that Justice League, international stuff, shows here. They're a well-oiled machine, putting forth their version of these characters and interactions.
I think Dormammu is a fan of Lord of the Rings as well.
Who isn't?
He's read the classics.
So overall, I thought it was a fun read. Not how I'd want to see the Defenders over and over and over again, but I thought for these creators doing their thing in the Marvel sandbox, they chose a bunch of good characters to work with, and the way they handled the dynamics between them and the villains, I thought was fun, from the original scene with Nightmare right down to the Dormammu and Umar stuff.
Yeah. And I always like the reverse image, the evil that's always fun too, however you want to depict evil versions of our regular heroes. That's, you know, doesn't like that.
All right. And then the other one we looked at was The Last Defenders, a 6-issue limited series that ran in 2008, written by Joe Casey, and the first couple of issues co-written by Keith Giffen, who also did layouts for the first issue. but the art chores in general are penciled by Jim Muniz with inks by Cam Smith.
And I just think you wanted to get some tangentially related Thunderbolts content in here again.
No question. When I started seeing Defenders, when I started looking at the Defenders stuff from this era and I saw Atlas, I was like, oh, yeah, we got to do this. This is the post-Civil War era of the 50-state initiative. So you've got Nighthawk and Gargoyle working for the feds out of Camp Hammond. And Nighthawk, Kyle Richmond, he gets the green light by Iron Man to relaunch a new team of Defenders, but he doesn't get to choose any of his guys. And so it's not the team that he envisioned. Yet he's supposed to lead.
They had so many good teams out of that initiative. They're like, why don't we do this crazy thing? Let's throw these characters together.
So the team is Nighthawk as the leader and Colossus from the X-Men, the She-Hulk, and the Flaming Skull. The threat is the Sons of the Serpent, a terrorist group of military commando types, where a small team of S.H.I.E.L.D. agents has infiltrated them undercover, but they haven't been heard from in weeks and need a rescue. And one of the guys is somebody that Nighthawk knows personally. The team has one outing and then is disbanded. But Nighthawk and She-Hulk stay with the mission and they fight the good fight. In the third issue, Kyle brings on the Merc Paladin and this Junta dude with gravity powers and this little flying drone sidekick. And Atlas from the Thunderbolts, awakened from his coma, Kevin.
Oh, he's been in a coma a long time.
I like that they, the Paladin's always fun. Like, just yeah. Openly on the take for money. And yeah, I always like the Paladin.
Follow mine.
But he's usually effective, which I like about the Paladin, yeah. Right? He can back up his attitude most of the time. We've seen him get in over his head, but for the most part, he makes the right decisions.
Hey, you're not going to keep hiring him if he can't get the job done, Steve.
So this team of She-Hulk, Nighthawk, Paladin, Junta, and Atlas, they leave the next issue. In fact, Kyle is forced to give up his mantle as Nighthawk in issue 4, too. So we've had two teams and had them both dismantled already in the space of the first four issues here. But other threats that we get to see throughout the series, the Atlantean Warlord Krang, Yandroth the Mystic, always nice and Defenders-y to throw in there. A piloted Quintronic men, a kaiju-sized Quetzalcoatl, and my favorite, Andrew, the Mad Bomb.
That was a fun surprise out of nowhere. But I like, concurrent with it, they're doing a Yandroth that's going back in time and wrangling with Damien, son of Satan. Which is a fun character and a fun take on it. Like, always can be a difficult guy to deal with. And I like that when they make him a little extra prickly. You know what I mean? I don't really like the sad maudlin version.
Right.
Which is fine. You know, that's your own, your mileage may vary, but I like the kind of complicated one, let's say.
But I like this portrayal of him where there's a touch of Hercules in him too, where he wants some adventure and he wants to do some swashbuckling, and you know, he's the guy who basically rallies everybody. The end of issue 5 introduces the last Defenders: She-Hulk, Son of Satan, Krang, a new Nighthawk, who is the S.H.I.E.L.D. agent that Kyle and She-Hulk rescued from the Sons of the Serpent, and they are a potential future team, because when we see them introduced, they've already been together a while and are a again, a well-oiled fighting machine.
Yeah, and I like that they brought Damien's chariot with the horses and all that stuff back. Best mode of transport in the thing. Like a super impractical chariot with hellfire horses and everything.
But it was cool to see Damien be inspiring, you know? And he had kind of cool armor and the mask and everything. They're like, what's with the costume? He's like, hey, the costume's appropriate for what we're doing here.
Well, some people just want them with the shirtless things.
So it was a little tough seeing Nighthawk being broken down so much because I do like the character, and I think his overall journey in the comics has been a fun one, especially through the Defenders. But overall, it was cool to see him, get to do some stuff and get to see the 50 State Initiative and the government mess up the Defenders just like, Disney would someday.
And that 50 State Initiative was a pretty fun idea to do it for a little while, but I think everyone's glad it didn't really last. But it was like a fun, crazy little mix-up business for a little bit.
Oh, I could have went for some libertines showing up.
All right. How about you got any recent reads? I've been doing some reading recently, and one fun bunch of one shots that I couldn't help but pick up are these Godzilla versus issues that have come out. We've had Godzilla versus the Fantastic Four by Ryan North, John Romita Jr., and Scott Hanna, and Godzilla versus the Hulk by Jerry Duggan, Giuseppe Camuncoli. The Spider-Man versus Godzilla by Joe Kelly and Nick Bradshaw, and the X-Men versus Godzilla by Fabian Nicieza with Emilio Lazo art. And each one is a self-contained what-if type story in another world that isn't connected to, current continuity. In fact, they take place at different spots in these different characters' lives. Like for the Fantastic Four, it's, Godzilla is in New York, but Galactus is coming. It's around the time of FF48 and that time. And even worse, Galactus is using King Ghidorah as his new herald, right? So you get the Silver Surfer giving all of his power cosmic to Godzilla to fight Ghidorah. And the FF kind of stand around and watch. And then the Hulk one has Banner working on Dr. Demonicus's. And remember Dr. Demonicus from, he actually first appeared in the original Marvel's old Godzilla series. Demonicus has a team of monster killers under General Ross's command. And they've killed Cerber and they've killed Fin Fang Foom. And now it's Godzilla's turn. And they use Mechagodzilla, but the plan blows up when Hedorah escapes and Banner becomes Hulk and helps save Godzilla to fight Hedorah. The Spider-Man one, it's right after Secret Wars when Spidey just got the black costume and Godzilla attacks New York City. Spidey has to, go out of his way to save Mary Jane, and the Black Cat's there too. And yeah, black costume right after Secret Wars, you know what they're going to do. They're going to venomize Godzilla. And lastly, the X-Men. It's the Jim Lee era of the X-Men blue team and the gold team, that bit. And this is the blue team versus Godzilla, kinda. The X-Men actually steal the super adaptoid, charge it up with their combined powers, enlarge it to Godzilla size with Pym particles, and then control it to fight Godzilla through Professor X's powers. So, like, you get an idea of they kind of go a whole bunch of different directions with these things, and none of them are straight Fantastic Four versus Godzilla, Hulk versus Godzilla. It's all done in a indirect ways. But fun. They've all been fun to read so far. And I guess there's a multi-issue Godzilla versus the Marvel Universe thing happening or something next.
I think so.
Yeah, I've seen the covers, but I haven't jumped into them. I was like, boy, it seems like Godzilla's having his moment too, because I think IDW's got some Godzilla books out there. So
Yeah, a bunch of
thought
them.
DC has some Godzilla books out there.
Yep.
Yeah, so well, who doesn't like Godzilla?
Exactly. Rose has got a book.
Well, I started it and then stopped it, but I finished the Mystique limited series that came out last year. I was buying the issues and then, I don't know, fell off at some point, and so just fired up the unlimited. It's so ridiculous. Why didn't I just wait and get it on the
That's
unlimited? But
the Declan Shalvey one.
yeah, the five-ish against Nick Fury Jr., but Nick Fury Sr. shows up. So we have, at this point, Shield is not what it used to be anymore. So they're really pared down. So it's fun seeing, them without the unlimited resources and everything. And they make a lot of humorous cracks about that. But it's a pretty hard-edged Mystique going against Nick Fury Jr. using all her tricks. And the plot involves her trying to find out what happened to Destiny. Is she alive? Is she dead? This is after Mystique and Destiny have left Krakoa. So I thought it was fun-ish. Like it was, I enjoyed reading it on the Unlimited. I can see why I kind of fell off reading it on the reg. But lots of references to her time with the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants and all that stuff too. So we get to see some of those characters come back. Because that's a nice thing. Mystique's, in our current thinking, has been in part of the universe for a long time. So there's always all these challenges and fights and all that. And, her and Destiny are the item. So that's what's going to drive her the whole way. And so is Destiny alive? Is she dead? I don't know. I don't want to spoil it for you guys. I think Kevin, did you get some of these or no?
Yeah, I think I got, what was it, the first issue? I'm gonna say.
Yeah, I think I got first two or something like that. It was fun
Yeah.
on the Unlimited. I just saw it was up and I was like, wait, oh my gosh, I think I bought some of these. Why don't I sit and read now that it's just this thing? I can just sit and read it all at once, which, let's be honest, for us old people who can't remember, it's the best way to get the whole thing going. And it's interesting, like Nick Fury Jr. as his own character separate from Nick Fury. I feel like sometimes they try and just blur it, but here, because they had both of them in it, it was kind of interesting to see him be his own man and contrast himself with his dad, Nick Fury.
Oi.
And some the mutant stuff, I always feel like I just never caught up from the 90s. Like one of the beautiful things about the title was for its enormous popularity, for the vast bulk of the new X-Men, it really was in the hands, 95% in the hands of Chris Claremont. So it was very manageable. And then at some point, it just kind of blew up, probably late 80s. No, I think it was the 90s. And then, I took a break. And then I just feel like I never, there's like 9 billion mutants or whatever. And there's so much there. I just feel like it's its own thing, separate from Marvel Comics in a way. And I'll never catch up. Even when I try and read those things now, I think it just feels like this own weird thing. And they also like so many kind of mutant-wide event type things, all the different viruses and extinction events and this, that, and the third thing. that I feel like it can be a little intimidating for me, because I'm like, wait, is this a post-apocalypse world, or is this after the techno, like all these different things? What of that continuity are the team playing with this time? But yeah,
the secret is you don't have to catch up.
Yeah, but the hard thing, even with that in mind, is like the ongoing series are very, I'm not finding them capturing my attention much. And part of it is what Andrew speaks of, where they're just splitting up and separating and recombining so many different teams and characters. And I think I'm to the point now where for Mutants, it's going to be like the side series, like, you know, Deadpool Wolverine or something like that, where they're kind of pulling those two out, or limited series that are easier to, that have a more defined scope than what's going on in the regular books. Like the Weapon X-Men limited series that's going on now, I think it's going to be 5 issues, is written by Joe Casey with art by Chris Cross and Mark Morales. Oh. And it's Cable, Wolverine, Deadpool, Warpath, Thunderbird, whatever they're calling them now, and Chamber. And
it's not Thunderbird?
Thunderbird is, I think they're calling him Thunderbird now, right? He's not Warpath anymore, but it's still the brother. It's
I thought you meant Thunderbird because he came back in during Krakoa.
Oh, maybe it is Thunderbird then. I don't know. I can't see what I mean?
But don't look at me.
I'll blame the current books for not being good, but I'm not going to blame good books for something.
Yeah, I mean, this one, it's really fun. In this third issue that I picked up, Deadpool gets hired by Baron Strucker to bring in Wolverine, and hilarity ensues, right? And Strucker builds this army of adamantine clones, and the rest of this non-team fights them while Wolverine takes on Strucker. And then the fourth issue is Red Ronin, who originally appeared in the Shogun Warriors way back when, and then had some appearances in the Avengers back in the Bronze Age, and then, you know, appears every blue moon, or I wish every blue moon. It's such a cool giant robot character, but kind of fun. Joe Casey doing his Joe Casey kinds of things, and the Chris Cross art lends itself to Casey's whimsicalness, I think, in a good way. Like, it makes the book, as soon as I started reading it, I'm like, this is fun. What's that?
Oh, how's it compared to that Captain Marvel run?
Yeah, I mean, it is, like I said, I immediately recognized it as being fun.
Okay.
You know, both visually and the reading. And it's like, all right, this is an X-Men book I'm enjoying, even though it's a 5-issue limited series. All right, Andrew, you got any more?
I was on the Unlimited. I did the Herbie number one Unlimited book. Those are those ones that are like infinite scrolls, and it's done. It's a very cutesy little, Herbie is the little helpful guy. It's Nathan Stockman, colors by Matt Miller. And they're, I think I've griped about this before to have my regular allotment of gripes, that I don't like when they convert books into that format.
Yeah.
And they're never clear that it is. They'll just, you'd be like, what's this? And then you're reading it and you're like, this is terrible. Well, it's terrible because they took a real comic and sliced and diced it. But this one is designed, you can tell the design ones because they're just infinite scroll. I think there was some Comics Tap It. There was someone else that was trying to do that format too.
You mean all the popular webcomics things? Like,
yeah, where there's no stuff? Where there's no break in them, and it just reads up and down. And it's kind of, I can see it's fun for me to read a little bit of that. I don't like reading a ton of it because the flow is a very particular sort of flow, or maybe that's what they lean into for the stories. But it is fun. It's usually Marvel, at least, been doing it for their lighthearted, you know, Jeff the Shark and stuff like that. So Herbie, this new incarnation of Herbie is exactly that, like very soft edges, cartoon friendly. And he's given a task to help by Mr. Fantastic to run an errand. And so that lets him interact with the world. And in the midst of doing that, he screws up the wizard's robbery totally inadvertently while rushing for this errand. And so he didn't complete his errand, but because he stopped the wizard, Mr. Fantastic gives him his approval. So if you don't like cutesy little Herbie as a silly cartoon sort of thing, then this is probably not your cup of tea. You know, if you want the gritty 90s Herbie, where he's they killed all his circuits, so he has to kill everyone in return or whatever, this isn't for you. But I don't know, these are fun. I just wish they were more clear about labeling. Hey, this is the one that's fun. I haven't noticed, because I'll click on something and be like, oh, this is terrible. It's clearly someone tried. I mean, I also, what do they do with full page spreads or whatever? I haven't never made it that far into one of these to know. So, and it's a lot of work, isn't it, for someone to, I mean, I guess they're just digital files, but it just seems like a lot to go through and do that to this.
You know, well, you're bringing up the whole thing of like when those webtoons, they have to translate them, and then it's like comics unscrolled, and then they gotta, you know, do their cut and paste magic and all that stuff to make it actually into a book again.
But do they know that that might happen when they're first designing it? So, like, do they not design the best web comic experience they can for the web comic because they know it has to be converted to this other, you know what I mean? Like, if you design it for what the web comic can do best, then it shouldn't be really convertible to the print. Otherwise, what's the point, right? So it's funny to have to, I mean, I get the, I get what they're trying to do. They've got the content. They want to get it out every which way, but.
Well, I don't know if they necessarily, I think sometimes some of these places are surprised that anyone wants to publish them in book form, because I guess it's not popular to do that everywhere. So that, so when it's being made, they're just like, this isn't going to be anything else, because why would anyone want this in print? And then someone comes along and they're like, whoa, what?
Well, I mean, I've asked that at many a panel, and they always usually dodge the question, but I always ask that of people like colorists and stuff. I'm like, how are you, this is going to come out on some cheap Canadian printer somewhere, or China, or wherever these things get printed, or it's also going to be on a digital format on these lush, you know, iPads and everything. So what's your, how, you know, you're not going to color it twice. I mean, there's no, it would be ridiculous given the financials involved. So how do you split that baby? Same kind of thing. You got to optimize it. Optimizing it for one is sacrificing the other.
See, I'm looking at the release calendar right now, Andrew, and I see Avengers Academy, or like Marvel's Voices Infinity Comic, issue 46, and it says exclusive. Right away, I can pretty much tell you this is an original story. This isn't going to be one of those chopped up older comics.
Good, because the only ones I know are like I said, the real kiddie stuff, like Jeff then, the Shark and all that. Those are obviously
more than that. Like there's the X-Men like stories between Krakoa and then like the whatever the era is now. And then there's like the Spider-Man stories.
There's also like Secret Invasion on here. And like, there's no way.
Secret Invasion? Where are you getting that from?
Yeah, if you look at the thing, what's fun is they orient the pages. Sometimes they have to put it on its side. Like, it just clearly they just sliced up the Secret Invasion book. It's under their Infinity comic, and it's just a weird way to do it.
I don't know. Maybe because I go through the release calendar, and then they have a broken off section, I think, on mobile that I don't really see the...
Yeah, I'm interested in them.
Something from 20 years ago, I'm like, that's not a new comic.
Well, just because it's in there in Marvel Infinity comic, and it's in their exclusive, but that it's not really... It's exclusive in that it's exclusive to this format, and this, but it's not... a new story. It's just an exclusive on
once,
the page.
Once you like tap on it.
I see the Herbie. I'm like, yeah, you can definitely tell that's a new story. The Marvel Meow, that's definitely new. The Astonishing Avengers, I'm like, I know that's new.
You can.
Astonishing X-Men, I know that's new. Like, I don't see anything else. Like, Fantastic Four, Into the Depths, that's got to be a new one. Like, I don't even, like, how often do they do these old ones?
Well, I
just went to the section, the Infinity Comics section, and that's where they all were.
Life hack, though, if you once you click on these things or tap on them and they open up and you see it's something you've already read, feel free, you know, you can go right out and close out and read a different one.
And yeah. I have to scroll to the end of it. To get out of it.
Really? Oh, that's bad. That sucks.
And you just tap the screen.
And here I was thinking I was being coy, and they're like, no, they've made it so you can't do that. You must finish the maze.
It very well could be.
Spider-Man, you can see that it says exclusive, but I also know that there's an Ultimate Spider-Man series running, so maybe you would get confused, but on the release calendar, they have the two issues back to back. So I guess you could get confused by that one, and you'd have to know that there was a new Ultimate Spider-Man series. Like, you can read either one.
No, I get what Andrew's saying, though, because I don't read any of these Infinite Comics or Infinity Comics because of when they started, all it was old stuff chopped up. And I'm like, I can't, I wasn't going to bother. It all seemed like it was old stuff.
But some of these things have like had 100 issues by now. So like, it's been a long time that they've been putting out new stuff. Cause I remember when like DC was really trying to do the new stuff on Comixology, and then they just abandoned it. But with the streaming services, I'm like, it's been years that they've been putting out new stuff now.
Speaking of new stuff, the current status quo in the Marvel universe is the whole One World Under Doom everything. I read another tie-in title, the first issue of Superior Avengers, written by Steve Fox with art by Luca Maresca, and one beautiful page by Kyle Hotz put in there just to make you go, wow, Kyle Hotz. And
I'm glad I didn't see that. You know, I would have bought it for that one page.
The idea of this book is Doom has Christoph gather and lead a new team of Avengers. And it's the female Killmonger, the female Dr. Octopus, the female Ghost, plus Onslaught, don't ask me how, Malekith, don't ask me how, and an armored Doom version of Captain America that is called the Abomination. And I don't know if it's a depowered Abomination, like if it's that. I don't know. I don't know what's going on there.
It's from the future.
What struck me was the first ish, they take out the Annihilation Wave that was attacking Washington, D.C. And I'm like, full stop. What? Like, Annihilus and his wave are big doings. Like, that would take not a half an issue walkthrough soft opponent. Like, it was, I thought that was really bizarre.
What, the Wrecking Crew wasn't available, Steve?
Yeah, exactly. So the Annihilation Wave? Like, I get the idea you have to have a whole bunch of things that you can hit, so you got to have something with a lot of drones or whatever, but it felt like a square peg being put into a round hole.
Yeah, they should have just done the leader and all those little pink guys he sends after the Hulk.
The
Badoon, or those guys from the movie was...
Oh yeah, who are they again? The Chitauri.
Yeah, I remember those guys. Yeah, those guys.
The other book I read was the first two issues of Old Man Daredevil, which here is
Okay.
called Daredevil Cold Day in Hell, written by Charles Soule with art by Steve McNiven, who is channeling like modern Frank Miller, like bad Frank Miller
Oh
stuff.
no.
So,
Why would you do that?
I don't know, because you're like, I get the, well, it's Frank, it makes it look like it's Frank Miller doing Daredevil, but it's, that's not the Frank I want doing Daredevil. It's very weird
No.
visually, but it's just what you would think. It's this postmodern future. An accident brings Matt's powers back. He had been depowered, and so he gets roped into Captain America's mission that he couldn't finish. And so you get a whole bunch of different guest stars and villains and lots of like, where are they now type moments. But other than that, it is just a it's a not very good looking Daredevil struggling to do, to barely do Daredevil stuff.
You know, when they announced this, I thought this has potential, but you know.
Well, this is the third
So you're
issue still
saying,
to come.
yeah.
So you're saying this Daredevil might not be able to take Ultron, is what you're saying, Steve.
But he might be able to take out a really, really old bullseye. We'll see. It's like going to be shades of Captain America 300 with old Cap fighting old Skull. Oy. But to end on a high note, at least at the books that I've read, you mentioned the Hulk, and the current Hulk book has been and continues to be a lot of fun. It's written by Philip Kennedy Johnson with art by Nick Klein, who's doing a fantastic job. The colorist makes his work look awesome too. And I read issues 22 to 25, and Kev Walker was the guest penciler for issue 24, which is cool too. And you've got the Hulk traveling with this girl, Charlie, who is now a skinwalker wearing the kind of evil god skin. And the eldest monster is still after them. And in 22 and 23, the Hulk deals with Charlie's skin being stolen while she was wearing someone else's skin. It's really weird stuff. And in issue 24, they fall into a trap while seeking help from Doctor Strange, but he's not home because he's in Asgard. So it's Clea that they encounter. Or do they? And then in issue 25, that has a sick wraparound cover by Klein with Thor and the Hulk. And he used to draw the Thor book, Klein did, but he didn't draw Thor like this. This looks, I mean, it looks really good. He's got Thor coming a calling for the Godskin because it has an Asgardian origin. And we get an awesome Thor Hulk fight. Really cool stuff. And it is evocative of so many different Hulk runs without being derivative. And it most recently we loved that Immortal Hulk book where there was that real touch of the horror, and you've got it again here. Like there's so much horrific, not just the transformation into Hulk or back into Banner, which is depicted horrifically. But like, remember that issue of Immortal Hulk where they chopped them up into all the different like little beakers and like little jars and had them in all the mason jars and stuff because he can regenerate. He's immortal. He can come back unless they keep his parts from touching and everything. Well, just to spoil one little scene, there's a thing where, for lack of a explaining it more, a bunch of werewolf type demon creatures are tasked with killing Banner while Banner's in a situation where he can't turn into the Hulk. And they do. And they come back to report to their leader. And the leader's like, cool, you killed Banner. And they're like, yeah, we tore him, stern to port. Like he's totally ripped up and destroyed, and we totally devoured him, and he's nothing. And then he's like, what? Wait a minute, you devoured him? And the reason why he couldn't turn into the Hulk was because of the spell in the particular place that they were. But now that they've come back and left that place, the Hulk can be the Hulk again. But he's been consumed by this group of Lycan, so he reforms from devoured bits inside of all of these wolves. It's, I mean, it took me a while to even be able to explain that, but boy, it still does nothing for what a moment it was. And it really harkened back to that. Oh, this is like when he was in the mason jars, kind of. So it's a lot of fun. If you're not reading this Hulk book, make sure you do so on the Unlimited, because it would really look good with the colors backlit on the, on a digital device.
Yes, the digital device. I want to end on a positive note, too.
Yay.
If I can, Super Steve. If you were in the Southern California area until March 1st of 2026, the Skirball Cultural Center is doing a big Jack Kirby display. So it's personal. So a lot of people lent their art, including family members. So chance to see like typewriter, paint sets, family photos, but additional, a tremendous amount of his work. Everyone knows Kirby did a lot of fun collages. So there's a few of those on. I personally always love his color work. So there's a nice World War II watercolor that I like. And he colored a Galactus with all these crazy colors. The original Black Panther concept art is there. The you may know he did those NFL concept drawings. One of those is there.
Oh, cool.
Someone has, other than the cover, maybe they didn't lend it, the entire X-Men number 7 issue. So I'm like, boy, how do you get an entire issue of a... Yeah, that's pretty cool. I would take that, you know, if you guys are looking for something for me. But I also love, with one of the lenticular, the Fantastic Four in the zone, so they did a giant lenticular poster that really worked. And my wife, who hates those things, and they always make her nauseous, and that one worked great. And we were all like, they should sell this at the gift shop. But yeah, just he did costume designs for UC Santa Cruz Shakespeare production. So they had a reproduction of that and photos. Just a guy did a lot of stuff, and it's fun to see the unusual, the famous Paul and Linda McCartney sketch. I guess whoever got it sold it to someone else or got rid of it. That's in there. Fourth world. I always love the stuff from the 40s and 50s. I don't see a lot of golden age art, period. I, you know, for all the shows I go to and everything, it just doesn't seem to come up. I mean, I do see it once in a while, but it's pretty rare. So just staring at something that old is kind of fun. There was a nice cover where it's one of the romance books, and it's about an artist, and it's Jack. And so the artist signs his name on the little easel on the cover, because he rarely signed the covers, the production covers. So it was signed. And I'm like, oh, cool. If you have that comic, you have Jack Kirby's signature on the front. I know some artists have worked their signature in. I always encourage it, but I don't think he ever did that. So, yeah, just, I think it was like less than $20 if you buy them online or something, free parking. And see some of the other stuff at the Skirball, but it was really great. A group of us went, and you know, it's just fun staring at that stuff. One guy also lent like all these Marvel number one, like the AF-15 and all these important Marvel issues, but they weren't slabbed or anything, just raw kind of in a case. It's kind of fun. So big fan. I did see Northridge had that Kirby exhibit a few years back. And this one is just as good, a little bit broader in scope. Like I said, the family has some of these color pieces and more personal stuff that he did. I would love to see the Shakespeare production, though. But yeah, super. It gives you appreciation for how enormous the man's scope of creativity. I had concept art from his animation work later in career, so... What are like some nice cutaways? We always love those of like the helicarrier or whatever. Just That's great stuff, man. Jack Kirby.
That's cool. Awesome.
What's not to love?
All right. Let's make that an episode of Marvel Noise. Thanks, guys, for joining me as always. Thanks, Kevin. Thanks, Andrew. Until the multiverse brings forth the Squadron Supremes, led by Diana Thunderbolt Ross, make mine Marvel. Later.